Yes, for the executive session.
Okay, thank you, you may be seated. This case is called concerning the Office of the State Engineer's approval of a plan of water management for the Special Improvement District Number 1 of the Rio Grande Water Conservation District versus the Special Improvement District Number 1 of the Rio Grande Water Conservation District and others. May I have the entry of appearances, please? Council, start on your side.
Stefano Tensio for the Second Preservation Association, Save Our Sea and Water Rights, Sea of Ditch, Mr. Richard Grant.
And who else is seated in council, bear with you, please?
Tim Buchanan.
John Buchanan.
And Mr. Buchanan, you are not going to be speaking, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so only Mr. Tensio. And on the other side.
Chief Justice Rice, I am David Robbins on behalf of all of the appellees and will be making the argument.
And who's at council, bear with you, please?
Your Honor, Preston Hartman, Assistant Attorney General of the State Division of Engineering.
Okay, thank you. And I think we're ready to go then. This is a 1 hour case. That means that each side will have a half an hour. That means, Mr. Tensio, if you wish to reserve some time for rebuttal, we need to keep track of that yourself. And we're ready to proceed whenever you are.
May it please the court.
Council.
This is the second time the sub-district's water management plan has come before this court. This court previously addressed this water management plan in what I refer to as the Acequia case, which you decided in 2011. I believe a brief history of this matter may prove helpful. The 1969 Water Act required integrated administration of surface and groundwater rights. However, groundwater rights are still not administered in priority in Division 3. It has long been recognized that the unadministered groundwater pumping in Division 3 causes injury to surface water rights. The 2010 decree, which is the decree for the sub-district water management plan, states, since both confined and unconfined aquifers are over-appropriated, groundwater withdrawals by wells tributary to the Rio Grande River and its tributaries are presumed to cause injury to senior surface rights. The amended plan, which is the sub-district's, part of the sub-district's decree, admits that the operation of wells within the sub-district has caused and will continue to cause stream depletions to the Rio Grande and its tributaries. The RGDSS groundwater model confirms the legal presumption. Now, several alternatives historically have been attempted as an alternative to well administration. These alternatives to well administration, because we still don't have it, are now recognized as having failed. In the 2010 decree, it states, after 40 years, we can fairly say that the very best efforts of many good people have failed to fully and fairly protect senior surface rights. The situation has caused tremendous conflict between surface water rights and groundwater rights. One of the many factors causing this conflict is the fact that surface rights alone bear the burden of meeting Rio Grande Compact obligations. So, surface water rights are administered in priority, and water that they would otherwise be entitled to divert is curtailed, let go down the river to meet the compact.
Well, how many acre feet
short of protecting against injury occurred in this case? I mean, is there any evidence that the sub-district's plan, the annual plan, is not preventing material injury according to the statutes that were adopted for the Rio Grande by the legislature?
Your Honor, the post-analysis, following an operational year, there's an analysis of its effectiveness, because the plan, the way it works is you have annual replacement plans. So the water management plan is basically a plan to come up with an annual plan. Once you, the annual plan is based on predictions and estimates, and then...
And then it could be adjusted after the irrigation season to provide whatever additional water is necessary to prevent injury, isn't that how it works?
The 2010 decree mentions that if there is a deficiency, then there should be a repayment of that deficiency in a subsequent year.
So the year 2012, when you looked at the operation of the plan during the actual irrigation season, how many acre feet do you think your clients think the plan was short of providing against material injury to service rights?
Well, I don't know those precise numbers, but what I can tell you is this. To the extent that the Rio Grande, to the extent that the closed basin project water was utilized as a source of replacement under the plan, that amount is injury to surface water rights. That was up to 2,500 acre feet of an obligation in 2012, which I believe was a little over 4,000. Okay? So the exact numbers, I'm sorry, I don't know. What I can tell you is they utilized up to 2,500 acre feet. They were allowed to utilize up to 2,500 acre feet. Don't know the final numbers on what they used, but to the extent used, that cost.
So the case is really about whether the closed basin project water could be used to protect against injury.
Exactly, Your Honor. And in the brief number two, the Ramstetter brief, we do address use of the closed basin project water as a replacement supply. And again, just a little bit of historical background on it. The unconfined aquifer and surface streams in Water Division 3 are hydraulically connected. Withdrawal of groundwater tributary to the Rio Grande is presumed as a matter of law to cause injury to senior surface water rights. And the 2010 decree found that pumping wells in the closed basin has caused and will continue to cause stream depletions to the Rio Grande. Now, the closed basin project, what it does is pump out of the confined aquifer in the closed basin. And the sub-district is proposing to use withdrawals of confined water out of the closed basin to pay for injury caused by water pumped out of the unconfined aquifer in the closed basin. So it's basically, we're going to pump unconfined water that injures the river to replace the pumping of unconfined water that injures the river. Basically, it's using a credit card to pay your credit card bill. Now, the actual operation of the closed basin project, as I said, over 100 wells pumping unconfined groundwater through canals diverted to the river. It's dumped in the river below any active headgates from the river. That water flows down the state line. It rings the bell, so to speak, to pay our compact obligation. That's the way it works physically. The key fact in analyzing use of the closed basin project is, under the proposal of the sub-district, nothing changes physically. Water is still diverted into the river below any active headgates, and it rings the bell. The only difference is that the trial court allowed the sub-district to get credit on paper as a replacement supply up the river. So water is delivered below the injury and below all the headgates. But on paper, it's getting credit above the outflow where the injury is occurring. So there's no, the dedication of project water to the sub-district does not increase the amount of water that would have otherwise been delivered to the Rio Grande.
That does seem problematic theoretically, but is there any evidence in the record to show or rebut the apparent finding that the trial judge made here, Judge Swift, Chief Judge Swift, that there was no injury and that in fact the annual component probably erred in favor of producing more water than less? Did I misread the finding?
No, you read that correctly, but that finding is presumed on a determination that you can use water simultaneously in two places. Because that's what that's what the determination is based on. The judge is saying there's no injury to the compact because the water is going to meet the compact. And it's being used as a replacement supply upstream on paper. Okay? What the judge did was equate reduction of compact curtailment with replacement of injury. That's where the problem is. If you consider the river as a whole, okay, the compact says we're going to measure up top, we're going to determine an annual obligation, we're going to deliver at the bottom. Okay, consider it a tax on surface water rights. The depletions from sub-district wells, if you want to characterize it, is like shrinkage of your inventory. We have an inventory of water, it's being taxed. We've got to pay this much at the bottom. In the interim, it's being shrunk. The wells are pulling it out from underneath, okay? Even if there is no compact obligation, let's say we met our compact obligation early in the year, no curtailment of surface water rights, there's still injury to surface water rights caused by well pumping.
Well, we're still being able to look at the record and having an expert that makes the calculations and shows us, you know, the number of acre feet short. And do we have any such evidence in this record?
No, sir, because this is a review of the very first annual replacement plan. We're dealing with the concept of use, not the effect of use. And so that's what we're dealing with here in terms of using the closed basin project is it legally available as a replacement supply? And as a practical matter, does it provide any wet water without injuring the state's ability to meet compact obligations?
Council, let me just, the way you stated there, so is this a, maybe this is a follow-on to what Justice Hobbs is asking, but is this a legal error that you're saying occurred or a factual error? Or a little bit of both. Can you help me understand that?
Well, the legal error is, there's both.
Okay.
The legal error is premised on the fact that the decreed source of project water is groundwater tributary to the stream, to the river. Okay? The decreed, the closed basin project is decreed as a salvage water right. What the judge did was it reinterpreted the decree. There's no legal authority to do it, but the judge reinterpreted the decree and basically said it's not really a salvage water right, it's a developed right. So to that extent, it's an error of the law. The other thing is that the salvage, the closed basin project is not decreed for as a replacement supply. So that's another legal error. The fact is that the primary purpose of the compact is to benefit the people of the state of Colorado. The true beneficiaries of compact water are the surface water rights. Why? Because they're the only ones that pay the compact. Okay? There's decreed priorities of use of the project water right. One is contribute to the annual delivery obligation under the compact. The second one is to provide water to two main wildlife refuges. And the third one is to retire our compact debt. Remember at the time, we had this huge debt owed downstream, okay? So federal project for the benefit of the state. Two of the three purposes deal with meeting the compact. The beneficiaries are surface water rights. What the trial court did was convert that and allow the project to be used by groundwater rights. So as a legal matter, yes, there's an error. As a factual matter, there's nothing in the record. Just as Hobson answered your question, there's nothing in the record. The determination was based solely on the interpretation of a provision of the 2010 decree. The judge said, well, the 2010 decree says you can use this. So,
I'll agree with you that the question was reserved. It seemed that it was reserved both in Judge Keyhole's order and in our decision, that the issue of the use of the project water, the closed basin project water, is an issue in this annual component of the protection against injury. And the first time it's come up apparently is 2012.
Yes, sir. Right? And the ruling allows it to, is basically spills over to the amended plan itself. Okay.
Well, I'm not certain about that. I think what we're looking at is retained jurisdiction to be sure that the annual protection against injury measure that Judge Keenhold insisted upon and that we upheld,
yes, sir,
requires the state engineer in some kind of public process, which I assume your clients participated,
yes,
to see whether or not there's any injury to senior service rights. That couldn't be plainer that that's a part of the plan. I think what Judge Keenhold said in that original document was that the beneficial uses for the closed basin project function in essence as a replacement plan.
No, that's incorrect.
Well, the beneficial uses for irrigation in these wells are, you know, wells for irrigation. Well, then what did he mean?
What did he mean? Here's what he meant is, if you read carefully in that decree, and I'll find the exact paragraphs for you, what he said was, compact water, closed basin project water that's used to meet the compact can be a tool in the event that the sub-district under-delivers, under-predicts the amount of water necessary to replace their depletions. The reason being is, our compact obligation is on an annual basis. So what we can do is temporarily stop ringing the bell at the state line, use it to replace the depletions that are occurring during the irrigation season, and then later on, we can make up the hole in our compact deliveries by the sub-district coming up with a different or additional supply of replacement water. That's exactly what he said. It can be used as a tool. The court did not say, in and of itself, project water is a replacement supply. It's just one of the tools in the event your replacement supply is inadequate. Why would Judge Keenhold say, at the end of the season, we need to make it whole? Why would Judge Keenhold say, the sub-district will have to come up with additional water to replace what was used out of the project? It's clear. It's not independent in and of itself. The trial court misunderstood the 2010 decree. And as you mentioned, Justice Hobbs, that issue wasn't litigated. I mean, to the extent that that decree can provide us with any guidance, I think the guidance is clear. It's merely a tool, not in and of itself a replacement supply. Now, you did mention the issue of retained jurisdiction. That's addressed in the first brief, the second brief, and that's also a very important issue in this case, because basically what we're talking about is whether or not the opposers have an opportunity to challenge either the amended plan or an annual replacement plan. Now, the reason there's a problem here is because of the structure of the sub-district's plan. The statute says you can have a water management plan. okay, which addresses water and water structures and reservoirs and that sort of thing. Well, when the sub-district went to court, they didn't have one. They didn't have structures. So what they came up with was a plan to come up with a plan. So every year on an annual basis, they'll identify their depletions, they'll identify the water rights that they purchased, they'll identify how they're going to replace depletions, all of those things on an annual basis. Okay? So retained jurisdiction for a water management plan is clear. It's set out by statute. The judge has broad and robust retained jurisdiction. For annual replacement plans, the statute says nothing. This is something created by Judge Keenhole or allowed, created by the sub.
Well, we already took care of that in the prior decision.
You did, and we're not challenging that. What we're saying is that that then created the need to define retained jurisdiction when you challenge.
And sure, the issue is protection against injury based on the model that Judge Keenhole talked about as a tool that was going to be continually refined to figure out how much replacement was necessary to protect against injurious depletions. You'd agree with that, right?
Correct. So here's the problem, is the opposers file challenges. The judge determines, I will not hear challenges to the amended plan. And I'm only going to hear challenges to the annual replacement plan after the fact. Okay? So challenges to the amended plan is part of the court of the trial, the water court's retained jurisdiction, robust. The judge, contrary to the decree and this court's order, said, I will not entertain objections to the amended plan. Law of the case is what the judge said.
But she did say that she would entertain objections to the amount of water needed to replace the injurious depletions, did she not?
That's correct. That's in the annual replacement.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the ability to challenge the amended plan was denied. Court said retained jurisdiction doesn't cover that. And the ability to challenge, as you said, the amounts as defined in the annual replacement plan was effectively denied because we were not allowed the opportunity to challenge it until approximately 20 days left in the irrigation season. This, we believe, is an error. Now, it's a void in the statute, but the decree to some extent covers it. What the decree says, if you'll look in the decretal portion, it actually addresses the procedure and standards for governing the retained jurisdiction to review challenges. And it provides different standards and different procedures. With regard to the annual replacement plans, they have to be filed very quickly after, the challenges have to be filed very, very quickly. And then the decree says, the here it shall be heard forthwith. The judge said, in this case, we're going to hear it after the fact. This results, this procedure, what the judge determined, which is something that is going to come up again and again and again. This is just one sub-district of seven proposed, and this is just the first annual replacement plan of forever. And the judge basically said, we will not have a hearing on your challenges. We will allow the plan to remain in effect, even though you're claiming injury. We're not going to decide that until after the season has occurred. This is in violation of the decree. It basically prevents opposers from utilizing the only statutory means provided by the legislature to guard against the unfettered administrative discretion of the state engineer. That's the only way to do it.
Well, did you make some kind of showing of what the injury would be to Jed Swift before she made that ruling that it was subject to readjustment at the end of the irrigation season? Did you proffer some kind of evidence, some kind of proof about the injury that the state engineer looked at this and approved it. Apparently running the model and doing whatever else the state engineer is required to do. You'd agree with that, right? You did have this window before the start of the irrigation season to make some kind of offer proof regarding the invalidity or the lack of adequate initial replacement for the irrigation season?
Yes, Your Honor, and basically what that was is within the 14 days we filed objections. We invoked retained jurisdiction and specified objections and challenges to the plan that are contained within there. Now, did we have an opportunity to present, make a record and offer a proof? No, because it was done on paper. It was a motion to dismiss filed by the supporters that was granted. Now, what the judge did was the judge said, you know, there are some issues about retained jurisdiction, and we need to address that. But then the judge never did. After the entry of the decree, the judge said, well, it's moot. So the challenges were properly made. The point is, the exercise of retained jurisdiction, the broad and robust retained jurisdiction afforded to the trial court, is the means to protect against unreasonable discretion. We were denied that opportunity because we're never going to get the chance before the plan is implemented.
Counsel, can I just get you to respond in anticipation of your opposing counsel's argument, which is that's exactly how the whole plan was supposed to operate. You were supposed to have a brief period to come in before the plan took place, the 2012 plan took place, and make, but that's supposed to be brief. And the whole point is that at the end, you figure it out. Can you respond to that?
Well, yeah, the answer lies in the fact that this is not, and I'm not challenging what the court decided. The court said this water management plan is appropriate even though it's a plan to come up with a plan. Okay, the water management plan said we're going to have an annual plan that actually identifies injury and water and wells and replacement supplies and all those things. So the challenge to the amended plan occurred, came here, was upheld. Now we're talking about a challenge to an amended, to the annual replacement plan, okay? We've not had the opportunity to challenge an annual replacement plan. We did that. The fact, again, it comes down to the law of the case. This was never decided. Why? Because it never existed until the 2012 annual replacement plan was promulgated. That's when we have the opportunity to challenge. Now, we can split challenges to the amended plan and challenges to the annual replacement plan. And I think that's what Judge Keenhold did in the decree. Because challenges to the amended plan don't have a time frame for resolution. There's very little mention of the process, but challenges to the annual replacement plan have to be made within 14 days, have a forthwith hearing, and challenges are based on a review of the record. I call it a hybrid record review. So the judge specified it's not this endless litigation, we go on and we never get to implement the plan. No, it's challenges to the annual replacement plan occur quickly, and they're pursuant to a standard akin to record review. So, as you mentioned, do we challenge the model? Probably not in an ARP, in an annual replacement plan. We challenge that in a challenge to the amended plan. There's a better way to do it. Well, then let's resolve that with no time constrictions as far as what injury is occurring today, as opposed to challenge to an annual replacement plan that says, for example, you can't use closed basin project water as a replacement supply. In effect, the judge said, okay, we'll deal with this later, so for 2012, go ahead and do it. That denies our opportunity to challenge the plan, because it's the structure. Every year it's different. Now, there may be some time in the future when the sub-district secures permanent supplies. That can be included in the amended plan. You challenge that, after that, it's done. other than the annual accounting, which wells, how much pumping, what's going to be our replacement supplies, what's our net injury because they rely on the surface water rights coming in, the recharge decrease, that happens every year. The judge said, let's do it quickly. The judge didn't say, we'll get to it after the irrigation season.
If you can stay the ARP, what's the practical implication for irrigation in the San Luis Valley?
The practical implication is that it provides tremendous incentive for the sub-district, the state engineer, and the opposers to cooperate. But the 2010 decree presumes an expedited hearing. The plan is proposed in April. I'm sorry, earlier than April, it's got to be approved by April. So there's a short window of opportunity before irrigation season begins to resolve those issues. So there's a mechanism to do it. But the annual replacement plan is tantamount to rules and regulations. And the law says you stay the effect of rules and regulations until challenges are resolved. That's what the rules say. Now what the judge did is said, I don't think that applies to annual replacement plans. I'm not sure what the standard is, but it's not that one. So we have, again, an issue that's going to come up in the future because the judge refused to provide us with guidance on the standards and procedures, or to basically flesh out what Judge Keenel said in the 2010 decree. So it's not as if this is a magical trump card that prevents irrigation in every season for which a challenge is made. There is an expedited process for resolution. But that, I think, is much preferable to what the trial court did here, which is basically deny us the opportunity to even have a hearing on these challenges until after the irrigation season was done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Robbins.
Good morning, Justice Rice and members of the court. I'm David Robbins, appearing on behalf of the appellees. If you would give me one moment to make just a personal comment, I was speaking to your bailiff as we were waiting for the court to convene, and it dawned on me this is the fourth chamber of the Supreme Court that I've had the honor of making an argument in. So it's kind of fun. I would like to introduce, in addition to Mr. Hartman with me today, or Mr. Paddock for the Rio Grande Water Users, Mr. McClure for the Skyview Cooling Parties, and my partners, Dennis Montgomery and Peter Ampey, for the Rio Grande Water Conservation District. I had intended to argue the case in three parts and to address this procedural question that Mr. Atencio just finished talking about, then talk about the augmentation plan challenge, and then talk about the Post Basin project. But I think I do need to respond to a couple of the justices' questions that were asked so that I don't neglect to respond, because in some instances my thoughts are different than Mr. Atencio's. The first question was one that Justice Hobbs asked, and that related to the impact of the 2012 annual replacement plan. The 2012 annual replacement plan actually over-replaced depletions in 2012. There were no adjustments made and no subsequent need to go back.
What evidence is that based on that's in the record that supports that?
It's based upon the court's ruling that the plan, I don't have the exact citation, but Judge Swift specifically determined that it was over replaced in that year. It was in a portion of the ruling that deals with the augmentation plans, and I may come to it as I go along. If I do, I'll bring it to your attention. As you've heard, the argument today involves a challenge to the first annual replacement plan for sub-district number one to effectuate its groundwater management plan. The amended plan of management was considered by this court and approved in December of 2011. The plan of management contemplated that each year an annual replacement plan will be prepared and that it will be customized to reflect the experience of the past year and to address the goals to be achieved in the coming year. The annual replacement plan, and I may sometimes shorthand that to ARP if it's acceptable to the court, is the implementing tool of the plan of management. In April 2012, 4 months after your ruling in the sub-district case, a completed ARP was prepared by the sub-district board of managers, approved by the state engineer, and the replacement of injurious depletions was in progress. The annual plan was challenged by these appellants on a wide variety of grounds. Now, we have a disagreement with the appellants about how that occurred. Several of their grounds were to challenge provisions of the amended plan of management. Now, the amended plan of management had just the year before been before this court on Judge Gingell's ruling, and it had been approved. And we filed a motion to dismiss those challenges based upon the thought that those issues had already been resolved, and that what we should be talking about was challenges to the annual replacement plan. Did it function as the plan of management contemplated? And if it did not, in what ways was there injury occurring or potentially occurring? And in my view, Judge Swift's ruling took that specific position when she denied in part our motion to dismiss, saying that they were, that the issues that they, that the appellants were raising were factual in nature, and she would have to hear their arguments and hear their evidence. And as to some, she granted our motion to dismiss. Mr. Atencio is exactly right, because those were the provisions where they were seeking to relitigate what the amended plan of management required. And she correctly, in my view, said, you don't have to, we don't have to relitigate that. We just went through a trial 2 years ago. And so what we're going to do before Judge Gingell, what we're going to do is move forward. So what I will do is set for argument your objections to the annual plan of the annual replacement plan. Now, this is an important thing that we need to think about. The statute, 3792.501.4c, actually has two parts. The first part says that the plan of management will be treated just like a rule. And that is exactly what happened. The plan of management came forward, and it did not become effective until after this court approved the plan that had been approved by Judge Gingell. But there's a second part of that statutory section that says the court shall retain jurisdiction over the plan of management effectively to be sure that it works right. And that's exactly what happened. We now have retained jurisdiction over the operation of plan of management, which means that annual replacement plans are subject to question or challenge by anyone who's dissatisfied with them. And those issues can be resolved, and the plan, if it is found to be lacking, can be adjusted. I believe it was Justice Hobbs who pointed out that there is a process in the approved plan of management that lets us look back and make certain that the replacements have been made each year so that injury is prevented. But if a challenge occurs and the plan has to be adjusted, that mechanism goes into play. Now, in response to Justice Hood's question, I want to make it clear that this entire process doesn't work at all. If an annual replacement plan is treated like a rule and not simply as the exercise of retained jurisdiction, and the annual replacement plan is stayed until
there is, until there's a final resolution of all complaints, because we would never have any replacement. Remember, these plans do two things. They don't just allow pumping in the coming year and the replacement of pumping in that year. They also provide for replacement of depletions that are already in the system that have occurred for the last 19 years. Well, if you stay in the replacement plan, what are you doing? You may be preventing well owners from pumping in 2015, for example, or in that case, 2012. But what you're also doing is you're not requiring those same well owners to replace the depletions that are already in the system because their replacement plan has been stayed. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't fit within the statutory scheme. There's a very easy way to resolve the issue, and that is simply to say, if you've got a problem with an annual replacement plan, step forward, explain what it is, we'll have a hearing, and if it requires adjustment, the statute provides for that because the court has permanent retained jurisdiction. The whole thing fits together very nicely. There's no reason at all to stay anything, because what you're saying is the efforts of people who, I remind you, voluntarily came up with a scheme in a way to try to address what they believed were problems with their life and the sustainability of their aquifer and their system and potential impacts to stream flow. Remember as well that when this all started, there wasn't even a model that established, as Mr. Atencio points out, that wells do have impacts on the river. Now, I just, very briefly.
Counsel, I'm wondering if you can address your opposing counsel's comments about the use of closed basin project water as a proper replacement source.
Yes, ma'am. I will go right to that. I'd be more than happy to address that. Justice Marcus, it would be my pleasure. The closed basin project let me explain to the court what we're talking about. Okay. This is an exhibit. It comes from figure 2.1, Appendix L, to the 2012 Annual Replacement Plan, which is Exhibit 125 in this case. It's a very simple map. It's not an ideal map, but it was the only one that we could find that had been admitted in evidence and that was sort of neutral in describing the physical structure. The San Luis Valley is a very interesting place. It has deep aquifers. It has a shallow unconfined aquifer, it has deep confined aquifers, it has two major rivers, the Rio Grande and the Canales, and it has an unusual feature, a feature that has been investigated since the beginning of the 20th century. It's called the closed basin. It is underlain by a heavy clay layer, and the water within the closed basin, by its name, does not move toward the Rio Grande. When irrigation water between Del Norte and Alamosa is diverted to farming fields within the basin, it, instead of coming back to the Rio Grande like it water does on the South Platte and the Arkansas, it moves over to a sump area on the east side of the basin along the foot of the Sangre de Cristo, which it was identified 100 and plus years ago, it evaporates and it produces just a large playa system. And the investigators and government officials have, for that whole period of time, looked for a way to recapture the water that came from Sawatch Creek and San Luis Creek and off the Sangres and the irrigation returns that went into the sump. And how could they get that water, stop it from being evaporated and turned into salt flats, and get it back to the Rio Grande to help Colorado with its obligations under the compact, and before that, just as more water supply. And eventually they built the closed basin project, which is a series of wells that run up the heart of the sump. And as you know, the court has found, and this court on four separate times has acknowledged, that this water is water that was part of a separate natural stream There was no determination, contrary to council's suggestion, that the water was tributary to the Rio Grande. It was found to be a waters of a separate national stream that was subject to appropriation. And the court determined in 1980, when that decree was entered, that it was water that was available for appropriation. There was unappropriated water available sufficient to allow the project to operate. And as a result, a decree was granted to construct wells and a canal to deliver water to the Rio Grande. Now, what do we go through the discussion of? Was it salvaged? Was it developed? Clearly, that decree and several discussions in the learned literature, as well as opinions of this court, have said, yeah, they were salvaging water. They were taking water away from phreatophytic growth and from surface evaporation and delivering it to the Rio Grande. But the point is, as to the Rio Grande, it's developed water. It's effectively just like a Trans Mountain diversion. It's water that physically the court has found doesn't get to the river but for the closed basin conveyance system. Okay? So, the question of whether or not this water is, quote, tributary to the Rio Grande has been resolved. You've decided in closed basin landowners, and you've discussed it in Simpson versus Cotton Creek Circles, that in fact, this is not water that is normally tributary to the Rio Grande. Let's then talk, Justice Marcus, about presumption. There is no question that there is a presumption in our state that pumping wells is presumed to impact surface streams and create injurious depletions. The amount, the location is unknown. Those are factual questions always, but there's the presumption. But presumptions are not black letter rules of law. They are subject to be overcome by facts. And in this case, as Judge Swift determined, the proponents of this annual replacement plan, the supporters, introduced evidence to suggest that this water was in fact available for replacement and that there was no evidence at all that, in fact, to the contrary, the evidence up until that time and relied on suggested that there were no impacts to surface streams, at least to the Rio Grande system, from the pumping of closed basin project wells. The sub-district is located in the western portion of the closed basin. It does not include the wells that are within the closed basin project. The closed basin project wells are shallow, unconfined wells, 100 feet deep, that are pumping the water, managing the water table to simply claim or salvage the water that, but for the pumping, would have gone up in the air. And as a result, there is no way, at least in the current evidence, there's no evidence in the case to support the fact that closed basin project wells create an impact on the Rio Grande or the other streams. And I want to emphasize, there was no evidence introduced by these objectors, by these appellants in this case. A question was asked, I believe Justice Hyde asked the question, was, well, what evidence did you present? They didn't present any. Nobody presented any evidence. And Judge, it's important to read what Judge Swift said. Accordingly, this is paragraphs 102 and 103 of the court's 2013, Water Court's 2013 decree. Accordingly, the facts currently before the court, as well as a consideration of prior decrees of this court, demonstrate that the closed basin project production is developed water and is placing water in the Rio Grande that would never have normally reached the river. Thus, the court cannot presume that pumping the closed basin project wells caused injury to senior surface water rights. 103, opposers did not offer any evidence in an attempt to show injury. Therefore, the court finds that the sub-district's inclusion in the 2012 annual replacement plan of 2,500 acre feet of the production of the closed basin project is suitable and adequate to replace the time, location, and amount.
injurious stream depletions caused by the pumping of wells. That was the standard that you set for us. That's the evidence we presented to her. That's the finding that she made. The fact that the appellants stood on a naked legal presumption, made no effort to rebut it, made no effort to introduce evidence contrary to ours, which they were free to do, it should not fall upon us.
It is not evident by this map what surface ditches are receiving the replacement water. Would you show us what ditches get this allocation?
Right. Justice Hobbs, let me just step back in a second. The closed basin project actually enters the river south of Alamosa at a location, as Mr. Atencio correctly pointed out to the court, below the headgates of all of the senior surface water rights. Mr. Atencio also explained to the court, I believe correctly, that the compact is often deficient if all of Colorado's water rights are diverting in priority. In other words, we don't get enough water to our neighbors. And we were sued by Texas and New Mexico in 1966 over that very point. So the state does administer the water rights located on the river and on the Canoes River to ensure that sufficient water gets to the river.
Well, where are Mr. Atencio's client ditches located?
I don't believe that Mr. Atencio represents any particular client ditches. I may be wrong, and I would stand corrected, but I do not believe that the objectors in this case, the appellants, are any of the senior surface water rights on the Rio Grande or the Canales acting as ditches. There are individuals who have water under ditches, and there is an unrepresented objector called the Castilla Ditch that does divert water about halfway between Alamosa and Monte Vista and diverts the water to the north of the river. But that's the only specific ditch that was a party in this case. But as Mr. Atencio pointed out, because we're moving water downriver in order to satisfy New Mexico's requirements under the compact, if you introduce water below ditch head gates, Judge Keenhold in his 2010 opinion discusses this in some detail, the division engineer releases curtailments on upstream ditches in that amount. So the effect of adding water downstream as the result of increasing diversions upstream. And so the reason that you can add water through the closed basin project, if you are producing well depletions along the river, if the depletions are occurring in the lower reach of the river south of Alamosa, you are replacing one for one, basically, with closed basin project water. If the depletions are occurring upstream, should you want to use the closed basin project, you can do so by what is in effect an exchange. You can simply cause the division engineer to reduce the amount of curtailment on the upstream rights and allow the closed basin water to make up the difference. Now, I want to make it clear, the plan of the annual replacement plan doesn't rely just on the closed basin project. We have reservoirs up here, there are reservoirs, they have lookout forbearance agreements. The statute, as you know, provides that you can make up for injurious depletions by means other than water. And forbearance agreements are very innovative. They keep track of how much depletion would accrue to each of the four varying ditches. And then at the end of the season, the subdistrict simply pays them an agreed upon contract amount for each acre foot of water which they lost.
That's a monetary amount?
That's a monetary.
It's not water pass.
It's not water.
So they forbear the injury, basically.
That's correct.
In trade for compensation.
That's correct. And that works great for an agricultural ditch because they have to make annual contributions to the ditch to fix it. Well, if by losing a small amount of water they get a bunch of money, then they don't have to charge themselves for fixing the ditch, and their annual payment goes down, they use the sub-district's money in exchange. It works slick. So between those mechanisms, not just the closed basin project, the closed basin project basically takes care of the injurious well depletion below. Now there's one other thing I want to make clear. The closed basin project decree is owned by the Rio Grande Water Conservation District. The Rio Grande Water Conservation District Board of Managers in 1985, right after the project went online, said, we propose to use the production of this project to offset any depletions, injurious depletions to surface streams caused by wells. In exchange, if all of the major water user organizations agree that we won't spend money litigating about trying to figure out what we should be doing. And for the period since 1985 to the present, the closed basin project production has gone to the river, 60% credit to the Rio Grande, 40% credit to the Canales, to replace well depletion. And all that's happened here, and that agreement was in 1996 subjected to public notice in a public court hearing at which that agreement was subjected to review and approval by the court to ensure that everyone understood and could comment. Now, so we've got this agreement. It's been operating almost for 30 years, 29 years. What's going on here today is the board of directors of the district and the water users on the Rio Grande said, instead of a lump sum replacement of well depletions, which we've been doing forever, knowing that we're going to have about six subdivisions, we will share out and allocate the water to the various sub-districts. And sub-district one being the first one, we will allocate to you 2,500 acres. So this idea that this is something new or is a different problem is just wrong.
Mr. Robbins, can I just follow up on that? Because I was reading a couple of letters that suggested that this 2,500 acre for the 2012 plan might be a one-time conveyance, or I'm not sure what the proper word would be, but I'm just curious, is this an ongoing thing for 2013 and 2014, or was it exactly a one-time deal?
No, ma'am. It's been ongoing in each of the other plans, and I presume will continue. I have no reason to think otherwise. And I want to make it all, one other thing clear as to this plan. There was an annual report filed as required by the ruling at the end of 2012 that reviewed what happened. Mr. Tensio referred to that. There wasn't one objection. We've had two more plan years. They've all operated well. So this is, you know, some of these issues are issues that I believe are you know, basically working well, and we just have to keep moving this process along, in my view. Before I run out of time, I just want to comment that there are 24 wells out of about 3,000 that are subject to augmentation plans. The only reason augmentation plans were included in the sub-district was to be sure that all depletions from all the wells in the sub-districts were replaced. All depletions were replaced. That's the only reason. And sure, the sub-district didn't include a map and a list. They had 4 months to put this plan together. And I don't know whether you call it new parent jitters or whatever, but for whatever reason, they weren't included. And sure enough, as soon as it was pointed out, the list and the map were included. The augmentation plan wells are not charged fees to the extent the water is augmented. They are charged fees for water that is not augmented. To me, it's a completely moot issue. It's been handled, but if the board has questions about it.
Yeah, can I just ask you, so, I mean, you're essentially saying any problems have been cured?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and then there's no continuing injury from that? I mean,
we do not believe, and the court has not determined that there has been any ongoing injury from sub-district number one wells.
that we are replacing all of the identified injurious depletions that are occurring as a result of well pumping, both in the current year and in the past 19 years.
Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Justice.
Don't you have a problem, though, because the closed basin, the creek doesn't mention the use of this water for replacement or substitute supply?
Well, the closed basin decree says that the water will be used for irrigation. It says it will be used to assist Colorado in meeting its compact obligations, and it says that it will be used to maximize the amount of water that is used in Colorado under the compact. And we believe that by putting the water into the river and relying on the closed basin project, we are fulfilling those decreed requirements under the court decree, those purposes, by allowing conjunctive use to continue. That was the idea in 1985 when the project came on, and remains the idea today. So we believe that the decree adequately encompasses the use to which the water is being placed.
Now, is that because of the unique features of this project and a collateral stop or whatever you're relying on from former interpretations of that decree?
It's clearly because of collateral estoppel, Justice Hobbs. That's correct. I mean, this issue has been raised on a number of occasions. Closed basin landowners in 1985 being the first one, 87 being the first one, in which that people argued that the project couldn't be operated in this way, couldn't be handled in this way, that Shelton Farms precluded the case, and the court, Justice Harrison, said no, it's a valid decree.
But explain to us why on the South Platte changes of water rights decrees include a designation of use for replacement or substitute supplies, and this decree does not.
I think my only answer is that the framers of this decree were not practicing at the same level of scrutiny as they did in the South Platte. I freely acknowledge that there are court decrees, there are decisions of this court that say, you know, we need to see a specific use designated in order to hold that it was decreed for that use. We believe that the closed basin decree was stated broadly enough in the various uses that could be made of the water, that the use to which it has been placed for the last 30 years is both appropriate and within the terms of the decree. I think I have very few other points to make. I want to emphasize to the court that this is a water user initiated process to achieve a sustainable water supply in the San Luis Valley. It harmonizes the use of surface water. The effort to resolve the challenges that these applicants have been raising has taken the last 8 years, and the appellees respectfully request that the court sustain Judge Swift's decision on the 2012 annual replacement plan in each of its parts and allow this effort to move forward. Thank you.
All right, thank you
for the comments, and I thank the court for its good questions and polite consideration. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Mr. Robbins, and thank you very much, Mr. Tensio, as well. The case will stand submitted. We'll be in recess until this afternoon at 1:30.